Welcome to SCOTUSCast, Absolute Immunity for Supervising Prosecutors Edition. Today our featured guest is Kansas Solicitor General Stephen McAllister, discussing Vandekamp v. Goldstein, heard in oral argument on Wednesday, November 5th. Thanks for tuning in. In this case, the Supreme Court considers the extent of absolute immunity protection for prosecutors. The case arises from the 1980 murder conviction of Thomas Lee Goldstein, which rested on the testimony of a jailhouse informant who had been promised a favorable plea bargain for testifying. This deal was, however, unknown to both Goldstein's attorney and the prosecutor on the case. After being released in 2004, Goldstein filed suit against, among others, John Vandekamp, who was district attorney at the time of Goldstein's conviction, alleging that he had violated Goldstein's constitutional right to due process by failing to ensure that prosecutors in his office shared information about informants. Vandekamp sought to dismiss the complaint, claiming absolute prosecutorial immunity. However, the district court denied the motion, a decision which the Ninth Circuit affirmed, finding that the conduct at issue was not prosecutorial in nature, but administrative. The Supreme Court is now asked to decide whether supervising prosecutors are protected by absolute immunity from liability for purportedly improper training, supervising, or policymaking. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, General McAllister.
On November 5th, 2008, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments in the case of Vandekamp v. Goldstein, number 07-854. The Vandekamp case raises issues regarding supervisor-prosecutor immunity in the context of a Section 1983 action. In particular, in Vandekamp, the underlying criminal prosecution was a murder case in which the defendant was convicted of murder based in part on the testimony of a cellmate who testified that the defendant had confessed the murder to him. Unknown to the defendant at the time of trial, the cellmate was working with the government and had obtained beneficial plea agreement in exchange for his efforts and his testimony. That was not disclosed to the defendant at the time of trial, and therefore the defendant was not able to impeach the cellmate's testimony on that basis. Ultimately, some 23 years later, the defendant obtained release from prison, his conviction overturned, because the failure to disclose the beneficial plea arrangements made with the cellmate was a violation of a case known as Giglio v. United States, in essence a relative of Brady v. Maryland, requiring that the prosecutor disclose evidence regarding witnesses, government witnesses, that would be useful or might be useful in impeaching such witnesses, and that typically would include things like a plea bargain or a deal or some kind of benefit obtained from the government. So after 23 years, Mr. Goldstein was released from prison. He then sued under 42 U.S.C. Section 1983. The supervising prosecutors involved in his criminal prosecution. In 1983 cases, it is very clear under the Supreme Court's precedence that trial prosecutors have absolute immunity for decisions they make at trial, and that includes putting on perjured testimony, withholding evidence, and so forth. So the prosecutor who conducted the trial of Mr. Goldstein indisputably had absolute immunity, and he was not named as a defendant. Instead, what makes Vandekamp v. Goldstein interesting is the former criminal defendant, now civil plaintiff under Section 1983, alleged that the district attorney and the chief deputy should be liable for failing to adequately supervise or train their prosecutors, in essence by not having a policy in place that would ensure that evidence required to be disclosed under Giglio was made known to all trial-level prosecutors. In this case, in fact, there was no question that the trial prosecutor did not actually know about the beneficial plea bargain that had been made or was being made with the cellmate who testified against Goldstein. In fact, other prosecutors in the office did know about it, but the information was not centrally collected or disseminated, so the trial prosecutor here didn't even know. And thus, Goldstein's argument was that the DA and the chief deputy should be responsible for not having a policy that collected such information and made sure it was disseminated centrally to all prosecutors in the office. The defendants in the case, the two supervisory prosecutors, moved to dismiss the case, arguing that they should get absolute immunity as prosecutors, just as the trial prosecutor indisputably has absolute immunity. The district court denied the motion to dismiss, and the Ninth Circuit affirmed. The Ninth Circuit relied on a line of immunity cases, the Supreme Court has decided, that hold that administrative functions typically are protected only by qualified immunity, not absolute immunity, and the Ninth Circuit argued or decided that in this case, the lack of a data collection system regarding evidence that might impeach government witnesses and the failure to collect that and disseminate it to all prosecutors was in essence an administrative function. It wasn't a trial strategy or tactical decision, but rather an administrative function for which the district attorney and the chief deputy only would receive qualified immunity. The Supreme Court granted review of the case, in particular to look at this interesting question of whether and when supervisory prosecutors are entitled to absolute immunity, or whether there are instances in which their duties are in essence administrative, such that they would typically receive only qualified immunity. The parties argued based on the court's many immunity cases fairly predictably. The prosecutors arguing that in essence the trial prosecutor gets absolute immunity. It's both unfair and illogical to say those supervising the trial prosecutor would get only qualified immunity. That will simply encourage defendants to sue DAs, even attorneys general, rather than the line prosecutors who may have actually committed a constitutional violation. They also argued that the Ninth Circuit misunderstood or misapplied the notion of what is administrative, since it had, and the plaintiffs conceded, that essentially had the district attorney ordered a trial prosecutor not to disclose the evidence, that personal involvement in a particular case would have given the district attorney absolute immunity. On the other side of the case, the plaintiff contended that there is a line that the court has drawn in many cases between functions that are protected by absolute immunity, such as prosecutorial functions, legislative functions, and judicial functions, and functions that are not so protected, such as administrative or executive type functions, which may well be performed by judges and by prosecutors, so that there is a distinction in the case law, and it should apply here. There were also amicus briefs on the prosecutor's side of the case from the states, including 49 of the 50 states in the District of Columbia, supporting the claim to absolute immunity for supervisory prosecutors. There was also an amicus brief from the United States on the side of the prosecutors, arguing that supervisory prosecutors should be entitled to absolute immunity here. The court had oral arguments in the case on Wednesday, November 5th. And in the oral arguments, certainly from this observer's perspective, it appeared that the court was very uncomfortable with the notion of not granting absolute immunity to supervisory prosecutors in these circumstances, and many justices seemed skeptical that one could actually distinguish between administrative and prosecutorial functions here when the administrative functions involve, in essence, setting policy about the conduct of prosecutions or providing training or supervising line prosecutors in those prosecutions. In fact, petitioner's counsel used less than 15 minutes of his time in his opening argument with relatively light questioning, sat down. The United States argued as an amicus in support of the petitioner, and then the justice's most aggressive questioning was really of the respondent and whether these lines that the Ninth Circuit had drawn and that the respondent tried to defend really could be defended under the court's precedence. So we'll see where the court comes down, obviously, when it issues its decision in this case. But from indications at oral argument, although those are often unreliable or perhaps tricky factors to use in predicting the outcome of a case, there seems a strong possibility that the court will conclude that the Ninth Circuit was wrong here and that, in fact, supervisory prosecutors should receive absolute immunity, in essence, in circumstances where those they are supervising, the trial prosecutors, indisputably have absolute immunity.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video from past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.